Good evening, morning, afternoon, or twilight, depending on where you are. This is John St. Germain, the voice of the Crystal Silence League, welcoming you to Crystal Silence League Hour. Once again, we broadcast from Castle St. Germain deep in the heart of East Tennessee. And I don't know if you've ever driven through here this time of year, but man, is it muggy and humid. It's hot, muggy, humid. And I don't know why anybody would choose to live here, except it is kind of pretty. And if you like muggy, humid weather, then by golly, this is the heavenly place to be. We're also swarmed with mosquitoes, stinging insects of all sorts, hay fever, plague, itchy, pestilence of all sorts. So, hey, come on down and visit us, folks. The mountains are open and welcome and, you know, here for your enjoyment. And someone was attacked by a bear last week. We are indeed living in the end times. And, you know, what can I say? No one ever said the end times were going to be pleasant, did they? Gosh, we're going to have a great episode this week. We're going to talk about attraction or induction, as Mr. Conlon called it. This is the art of sending out attractive thought waves to bring into your life those things that you most desire, affecting reality with thought waves, creating attractive forces in your life. And so stick around. We're going to come back. Our stone of the week is a very attractive stone called rhodogrosite. We're going to talk about that as well. So by all means, grab your crystal balls and clutch them tightly. Get a beverage of your choice, hot or cold. I suggest cold. And join us in just a minute. And I'm back from astrally projection myself all over the place. John St. Germain returned. The Crystal Silence League Hour brought to you by Lucky Mojo Radio Network, LMC Radio Network. And we, of course, have a very fine lineup of which we will recap later. As you know, the Crystal Silence League, or maybe you don't know, was founded around 1917 by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon, who visualized a worldwide web of people sending out affirmative thoughts, and Mr. Conlon would, three times a day, send out affirmative thoughts and prayers to those who need them via crystal sphere, the crystal ball, and other members of the society would have small crystal balls by which they would receive these affirmations or tonics, as he called them, three times a day. He was a very powerful magical adept who was able to send these projections, and he gave lessons on how they could practice these four branches of crystal gazing, and we are teaching those and discussing those as we speak. And it is the custom of the Crystal Silence League that was reborn online a few years ago by members of the Independent Missionary Spiritual Church to have prayers posted online. Mr. Conlon had people send him prayers via postcard and letter. And we have hundreds and sometimes thousands of prayers posted daily. And you can go online. Prayer is always free at the Crystal Silence League. And you can also join if you like. And if you join, you get one of Mr. Conlon's books, Crystal Gazing, and also codes and lessons for members of the Crystal Silence League. These books also, you can buy them at $5 each or get them free if you buy a crystal from Crystal Silence League. The books teach you the techniques and art of using crystals for projection, for attraction, for seership, and for healing. And, of course, we discuss further advanced methods here. And I myself am working studiously on a book bringing these methods into the 21st century. The purpose of the Crystal Silence League is to send positive prayer and affirmation to those who need it. And it's been the custom of the show since its inception for me to print some of those prayers and to read them out loud on air. And those who listen can choose to join me as I read these prayers out loud. I never read the names out loud. I only identify them by prayer ID number and occasionally initials. So let's do that, shall we? I'll start now with prayer ID number 39190 HP, who prays for the relationship between M and T. And she prays that her friends M and T will find a way to make their relationship work, and that they get their communication happening, and that communication opens, and that they return communication with each other, and hope that relationship works out. Prayer ID number 39189 CM needs the knower of all secrets to send a sign that her pleas for financial blessings have been heard. She's living in poverty and needs help with her financial situation. You know, may those blockages be lifted. Prayer ID number 39188 MC is praying for her son, who had a court date, and apparently needs help swaying the judge in his favor. So there needs to be her son needs to be expedited, and the judge needs to be swayed in his favor. Prayer ID number 39187 is S. Needs to have help that Mr. A, his enemy, has stolen his most precious possession, S, and so may his most precious possession, this person, be returned to his life. Prayer ID number 39186, MR, is praying for a friend who's taken an important exam, and may she pass that exam. Prayer ID number 39185, LM, has a relationship with D, and wants to wants us to pray that her relationship is such that she will see D, and that they become very close and start dating soon. She wants to strike a flame of attraction between them. Prayer ID number 39184 AM wants to thank the site for everything, and wants a prayer for the regarding her marriage, and hopes that that will come true, that the prayer for the marriage will cause the marriage to occur. It's kind of hard to sift through that. Hopes that the marriage that she's hoping for will happen. So we do hope that does happen for you, dear. Prayer ID number 39183, RA, prays for good health. Hopes that good health for her friend E, who has a biopsy scheduled, and may the mass either disappear or be declared completely benign. Well, by the grace of all good spirits, may that be so. Prayer ID number 39182, KH, needs a car. And needs help getting the means to get that and get the right car. So, you know, may that come true for her. Prayer ID number 39181, DI, needs praise that the love of her life gives another chance to that relationship. Everyone deserves a second chance. Prayer ID number 39180, AD, prays for the good health for her friend Jay. Needs a new liver for her that would come immediately, and that she'll be strong and whole. Prayer ID number 39179, SB, prayers for employment, needs a good job. And we have prayer ID number 39178, needs removal of curses and all negativity, so may all negative influences be removed from her life and her existence. Let's have prayer ID number 39171 for S, who prays that his lost love be restored to him. And we need prayer ID number 39167, JK, who needs all negative beings inside his circle be reversed and sent to the outside. May that be so. May all negative energies be removed from his circle. We need prayer number ID number 39161, BB, has taken a new job, but the pay is not sufficient to take care of herself, her mother, and her kids. And she needs a better job or a raise or better financial situation. And we have prayer ID number MC, who has a court date and needs prayer that her attorney will actually do something to help and that the court case is ruled in his favor. May that be so. And we have prayer ID number 39152 SS, and prays that his soulmate MP realizes that they are meant for each other. And finally, prayer ID number 39151 LB needs for A to contact him soon for things to work out, and desperately wants things to work out with A. And may all these people have their prayers answered. May they get relief. May they be free from suffering. May they be freed from the causes of suffering. And may, if it's the will of the great universal mind, the great divine being, the higher spirits, may their prayers be answered, if at all possible. And let's take just a moment. Let's just take just a moment of silence for all of those in need of peace and love and to have their heart eased. Thanks for joining us, everyone. I imagine this worldwide audience hanging on to my every word with bated breath. Let's talk about our crystal of the week, which is rhodochrosite. Rhodochrosite's one of those gems, a lovely thing that ranges in color from this sort of dark reddish pink, sort of the color of Mountain Dew Code Red, through pinkish red, through kind of an orangish red, all the way down to brown. So it can be used for a variety of conditions, and it can be a self-confidence treatment. It boosts your self-confidence, which means it can go all the way down from the root chakra all the way up through the sacral chakra, through almost all the way up to the heart chakra when it's pink form. So it can be used to help bring a balance to life. It can help you when you feel overloaded, give you a sense of relief from that sense of overloaded. It can help ease issues that are caused from the past, help ease your heart from those past issues that need resolution. It can help you in meditation work, help focus your meditation. It can help enhance your ability to give and receive love. It can allow your love boundaries to expand. You can dive deeper into the experience of love. It can calm excessive passions. You see, if your boundaries are too big, you can bring it in. If your boundaries are too narrow, it can expand it. It balances those processes. It can help free some of your emotional hang-ups, which is not a very bad thing to have. There's a kind of a folk medicine aspect to all crystals, so this is, since it goes down to the root and sacral and heart, it can be good for digestion, kidneys, spleen, pancreas, circulatory things like the heart, and all the way up to the thyroid. It can be used for stress relief. You can take the stress and it'll transform it into more vital energy, and it takes the stress energy and makes it more productive. So it's very good. It's very good for that. It can help you in your underactive chakra issues for things like loneliness and heartache and insecurities and those wounds you get from emotional ups and downs when you've been kicked around by life. It can help you with those where you're afraid to experience love again. Help you forgive yourself. Help you realize that you do deserve to have happiness and a good life. So it's a very interesting crystal. In its purest form, it can be a little expensive. In its dirtier forms, where it goes down to darker brown issues, not quite so expensive, but it's a good stone to have in your crystal arsenal if you're a serious crystal worker. So that's rhodochrosite. the multi-purpose crystal. You should pick some up if you can. Go dig some up yourself. They're over in the Orient. Tonight's episode is the third branch of Mr. Claude Conlon's crystal gazing system, the receptive branch, also called induction or receiving. I'm going to tell you that this is a very interesting branch. We talked last time, not last week, because I was dealing with other things, work-related things, but week before about projection. Projection being the act of entering the silence and projecting your will, silent influence upon people, places, events, the world in general. Receiving is receiving the fruits of your projection or simply opening yourself up to an attractive influence. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit at this point about the law of attraction, because this is the root, basically. This was in the very early days of the law of attraction, and later authors were inspired by this, Napoleon Hill and other people who wrote about the law of attraction were, of course, inspired by the writings of William Walker Atkinson and other new thought writers, and applied this. Unfortunately, later writers, building upon those writers, this concept of law of attraction got mystified and refined and misunderstood and turned into something that was not entirely understood. I want to tell you that the early writers like Atkinson had a firm understanding of how this worked. Later on, it became very mystified. If you read books like The Secret, you see books like The Secret, you see the movies, The Secret, the book The Secret, and even Earl Nightingale, who was on the radio quite a bit, called the law of attraction a strange secret. He said the strange secret about this positive thinking is that it sends out an attractive force that will bring things to you. I've heard people say that the universe answers your call, that you send it out and the universe responds to it. In The Secret, I think she talks about things like that, that it's a mystical force, the universe answers it. And this was not how it was originally presented. The early writers of New Thought eschewed any kind of metaphysical or mysterious process. They couched it in hard science. They appealed to common sense and reasoning. Atkinson and Mr. Conlon said, don't chant mantras, or don't chant, mantras are one thing, but don't chant spells and incantations and burn incense and rub oils and powders on your crystal ball. They eschewed that. They said it's not necessary. They insisted that this was a scientific process and explainable, utterly explicable in terms of science as it was understood at the time. Now, what I'd like to share with you right now, I have some excerpts from a wonderful book by William Walker Anderson's book, Practical Mental Influence, which was written around 1908. It's a pretty early book, and I'm going to tell you that in this, in his first chapter, he talks about how thought waves are similar to waves of magnetism, phenomena of other wave-like nature like magnetism, light, and electricity, which is true. He also talks about how current science, and we're talking about science in the, this is around 1920, in the 20s, and he talks about how the science at the time understood that the atom was wave-like in nature, was vibratory in nature. He's talking about vibrations, that the atom was vibratory in nature, that it was not a solid object, but a vibration, vibratory in nature, which was true. Scientists at that time were working their way toward an understanding of quantum physics. This was in the very, very early days of quantum mechanics. And So this was quite in tune with science then and science now, that reality consists of activities and waves, not solid objects. And we'll go into more of that later, but what Atkinson was pointing out was that he was appealing to common sense and science and logic. And what he says at this point is, the trouble lies in the dogmatic assumption of the materialistic school that what is known as mind is merely some peculiar action of the material brain. Some writers even holding that the brain secretes thought just as the liver secretes bile. They refuse to see that the operation of mind is a manifestation of energy known as electricity, magnetism, light, heat, gravitation, cohesion, etc., because mental energy does not register the vibrations of these lower forms of energy. They conclude that the higher mental energy does not exist. Having formulated a theory to suit their materialistic conceptions, they try to ignore all facts not consistent with their theory. If they find a fact that will not squeeze into their narrow theory, well, so much for the worse for the fact, as the writer has said, and they promptly ignore or dispute it. Understand, this was written well over a century ago, and it still applies to this day, to the hardcore skeptical mind. If it doesn't fit the preconceived notion, then, you know, too bad. As a matter of truth, Atkinson goes on to say, the investigator is not compelled to resort to metaphysical explanations to account for the phenomena of mental influence. The very facts of physical science itself, if rightly interpreted, will give the clue to the mystery and will point the steps of the honest investigator toward the path where he may find a solution of the perplexing riddle. Although we know that the real solution lies in the metaphysical realm, still even physical science will corroborate the facts of the metaphysical sister science, and instead of contradicting the latter, will actually go far toward furnishing analogous facts and principal basis for the theory of metaphysical facts. Now, he goes on and talks about thought transference and some other things. And now here we go. Physical science teaches that underlying all forms, degrees, and apparent differences in matter and energy, there is to be found a manifestation of some elementary energy which manifests in what is known as vibrations. Everything in the material world is in vibration, ever manifesting a high degree of motion. Without vibration, there would be no such thing as a material universe. From the electronic corpuscles which science teaches compose the atom, up through the atom and molecule, until the most complex form of matter are manifested, there is the ever-present vibration. And through all forms of energy, light, heat, electricity, magnetism, and the rest, vibration is also ever-present. In fact, physical science itself teaches that not only is vibration the basic force underlying other forces and the various forms of matter, but also that the apparent differences between the various forms of matter and also between the various forms of energy are caused simply and solely by the varying degrees of vibration manifested. And there, in a nutshell, you have the underpinnings of quantum theory. The wavelength of the waveform. Quantum theory goes further, though. Quantum theory says that everything exists in a flux of indeterminate waveform until it's observed, and then it collapses into a determined wave. That's the Copenhagen interpretation, anyway. And then he goes on to talk about how there are waves of sound that can be heard and that can't be heard, waves of light that can be seen and not be seen. And then he says, said that any intelligent scientist will tell you that science has every reason to believe that there are great fields of energy and force, the vibrations of which are far too high for even the most delicate instrument to science to record, but which nonetheless exist and manifest effects. And he points out that only the other day science was able to catch X-rays and other forms of these of high radioactivity. And tomorrow science will be able to perfect instruments which will be capable of registering still higher forms of energy. And even someday, some scientists will perfect an instrument capable in registering and recording the subtle vibrations of thought. And, well, you know, they did. It's called an EKG, or an EEG. Back even then, they were talking about recording thought waves, which, of course, has been done. What I'd like to point out to you now is that these he goes on to say, all students of mental influence have noticed the close resemblance that's manifested between the phenomena of electrical and magnetic energy on the one hand and the phenomena of mental energy on the other. So close is the analogy that one may take the proven facts of science relating to electrical and magnetic phenomena and confidently proceed with a certainty of finding a strikingly close correspondence in the field of mental phenomena. And the recognition of this fact is helping the workers in the mental field group together the varied phenomena that come under their notice and to work out the theory and practice of mental influence. And this will knock you dead. This will just knock you dead. Because remember when this was written. This was written previous to 1920 or so. In the first place, it is now a fact well known and accepted by investigators that the generation of thought and the manifestation of mental states occasions a burning up of brain matter, and the consequent production of a form of energy of high vibratory power. Physiologists recognize this fact, and the textbooks make reference to it. Experiments have shown that the temperature of the brain is increased in accordance with the intensity of feeling and thought, and that there is undoubtedly a generation of energy and a consumption of brain matter, which bears a very close resemblance to the process of the generation of electrical energy. And this being conceded, it follows that this energy, once released, must be emanated or sent forth from the brain in the matter akin to the emanation of other known forms of energy, that is, in the form of waves of vibratory force. And, folks, this is what makes brain mapping possible, this very increase of heat and energy in the brain. That's why it's possible to do brain mapping. In the forms of waves of vibratory force, light and heat travel in this way. So do electricity and magnetism, so do the forces of radioactivity. And the investigators of mental influence have demonstrated by their experiments that there is such a thing as thought induction, and many are the phases of manifestation similar to that exhibited by electricity and magnetism. Flammarion, the well-known and eminent French scientist, has said on the subject, we sum up, therefore, our preceding observations that the conclusion that one mind can act as a distance upon another without the habitual medium of words or any other visible means of communication, it appears to us altogether unreasonable to reject this conclusion if we accept the facts. The conclusion will be abundantly demonstrated. There is nothing unscientific, nothing romantic in admitting that the idea that influence a brain from a distance, the action of one human being upon another from a distance, is a scientific fact. It is as certain as the existence of Paris, of Napoleon, of oxygen, or of Sirius. There can be no doubt that our scientific force creates a movement in the ether, which transmits itself afar like all movements in the ether, becomes perceptible to brains in harmony with our own. So there you have it. When a thought or feeling is generated in the mind or brain of a person, the energy generated flows forth from the brain of the person in the form of waves of mental energy, spreading from the immediate neighborhood of the thinker to a distance proportional to the strength of the thought or feeling. These thought waves have the property of awakening similar vibrations in the minds of other persons coming within their field of force, according to the laws of mental influence, which law has been explained by many people who wrote in this field. Goes on to classify different types of thoughts. He says that thought waves are manifest in a variety of forms and phases, and this is very interesting. I want to talk a great deal about this in just a minute. Thought waves are manifest in a variety of forms and phases. Some of the waves emanated from the minds of all thinkers, unconsciously and without purpose, and usually without much force. If you want to see examples of that, just spend a little bit of time on Facebook or reading comments on YouTube. Without purpose and without much force. Other thoughts are sent forth with great force and travel far, manifesting a degree of influence commensurate with the force with which they're projected. Other thoughts are directed purposefully towards certain individuals or places and travel along rapidly in a straight line to the point which they've been directed or aimed. And we talked about those last time about projection. Others are sent forth with great strength and power, but instead of being directed toward any particular person or place, are designed to sweep around in great whirlpools of energy affecting all who happen to fall within their force field. you will readily understand that there is a great difference between thought waves sent forth idly and unconsciously and without knowledge of the underlying laws of mental influence and those projected with a full knowledge of the laws governing the phenomena and urged on and directed by a powerful will of the sender. Now, at another point, he points out the vibratory force of these thought waves do not cease with the sending force of the wave, but they can persist for a long time afterward, just as heat in a room persists long after the fire in the stove has been extinguished. He points out that the ray of light travels through space for millions of miles from a star, and for centuries after the star itself has been blotted out of existence, the light goes on. That's the way the thought of a powerful receiver can go. You can send your thought out, and it goes on long after you're gone. It occurred to me that a good example of that is if you go into a building that still has strong emotional energy in it. Haunted houses is one example, but you ever go into a building and you go, oh, man, something creepy happened here. That's the thought energy that's been hanging around for a long time. Oh, in fact, oh, he says here right here, there are many places today filled with the thought vibrations of minds long since passed outside of the body. There are many places filled with the strong vibrations of tragedies long since enacted there. Every place has atmosphere of its own, arising from the thought vibrations set in motion by the various persons who have inhabited or occupied them. You know those cursed businesses? You know, you got buildings where businesses can't survive. You have to go in and cleanse them out. This is a very powerful concept. You think about parts of town that are low parts of town where vice and criminal corruption. They're always going in to try to clean them up and make them better parts of town, but they can't do it. You know, the criminal, the low energy is there. You can't get around it. You just can't. You can't stop it. So here we have a scientific basis. You have a scientific basis for the law of attraction, something that most people who teach this don't seem to bear in mind. Now, I don't know why they don't. I think because they want to bring, and I'm going to go there, they want to drag religion into it. They want to say God gives you this. And here's the problem with this. When you start talking religion, you're going to bring up boundaries. As soon as I say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew, I'm a Buddhist. Well, Buddhism isn't a religion, but as soon as I say that, I've immediately cut myself off. I've immediately distanced myself from anyone who's not that. I say I'm a Christian, I've cut myself off from everyone who's not. If I say I'm a Jew, I've distanced myself from anyone who's not. Now, we say we're tolerant. We say we are, but we're really not. All you got to do is look at the world. We're not. We're blowing the fucking world up because of a difference in opinion. And so I think that when we start saying the universe has given us gifts, we're turning off a whole bunch of people. They go, yeah, that's that airy-fairy, woo-woo, New Age garbage. And that's not how law of attraction works. It really isn't. This is a scientific thing. And this explains why, you know, when people say, well, you know, if there's a God, why does he give you a raise? You know, you pray and you get a raise at work while there's children starving over there, you know, with snakes biting them. It's not God. God has nothing to do with that. It's because the force of a powerful mind can attract a raise at work. But more than that, let's talk about that vortex of energy that Atkinson was talking about. Let's talk about how he points out that at one point, how thoughts have an attractive force. He says that like thoughts attach themselves to the thoughts of other people like magnets. For instance, if you're thinking prosperity, that thought goes out and attaches itself to other thoughts of people thinking the same thing. And those go out and they group together. Do you understand? It's like iron filings attracted to a magnet. When you're thinking along a certain line, those thoughts behave like any other type of waveform. They heterodyne. Do you know what that means? They heterodyne. When you can see the heterodyning if you throw rocks into a pond. The ripples will interact with each other and overlap and create wave patterns that heterodyne. They strengthen each other. So when I'm sitting here projecting my thoughts of love and harmony to the world, everyone else who's thinking that same thought, not necessarily love and harmony, but they're thinking the same way, along the same lines, with the same force, those thoughts unite. They unite and they strengthen each other. So people thinking the same things, those thoughts build a vortex. They attach to each other and strengthen and form an attractive force. You see? It's like when you if you take one magnet and attach it to a second magnet, you've tripled or you've doubled the magnetic force of that magnet. If you send out one thought and it piggybacks on a second thought, you've doubled it. If those two thoughts piggyback on two more, you've quadrupled it. Imagine this going on with thousands of thoughts. Now, here's the scary thing. You get a group of powerful thinkers with a united purpose. 10 people can keep down a nation. 10 people can keep down a nation. If the nation is doing that thing that we were talking about earlier, if a nation is doing nothing but those undetermined and thoughtless and lack of powerful thoughts, if they're just getting by, if the nation is just getting by, and you have 10 people in power who are keeping them down with united front, yes. You understand the Nazi regime was held up with about 10 people, right? You had a very powerful will at the top, held up by about 8 or 9 other people. The Nazi regime was held up by the vortex of power by 10 other people. And it's been said that World War II was won by 5 people. 5 people won World War II. It was the united wavefront of 5 people. We didn't win by manpower. We didn't outpower Hitler. We won because of the united wavefront of 5 people. 5 people beat 10 people. It wasn't our armies beat their armies. They outnumbered us. They outpowered us. They had more power. And a lot of people say, well, the atomic bomb beat Hitler. No. Look at the dates. The atomic bomb was dropped 10 days after Berlin fell. The atomic bomb was dropped after Berlin fell. Hitler was dead. The atomic bomb was dropped on Japan after Berlin fell. Berlin fell in April. Bomb was dropped in May. You know, look at your history. The bomb had, you know, Hitler was dead. It wasn't the atomic bomb in World War II. World War II was over. The bomb was dropped to show, okay, don't do this again. It's dropped on Japan. You know, Japan hit Pearl Harbor. We hit Japan. So, no, it wasn't the atomic bomb that won World War II. It was just to show the rest of the world, okay, don't mess with us again. Let's not do this again. So, 5 people beat 10 people with a force of will. And, you know, you should look at history and see who those 5 people were. I can give you a list of them, but I'll tell you that one of them was Turing. You know, his cracking the code was one of them, and they punished him. They charged him with criminal activity. So, a group, you know, 10 people with a united thought front can send up that vortex of power that draws in the power form that will overpower the weak will of an entire nation. This is why you can get a raise at work by thinking, gee, I'd like a raise at work, and why you have an entire nation of starving people. That's why the world looks unjust. I mean, Buddha said the world's unsatisfactory. And through meditation, you can achieve enlightenment and get away from it, you know, through an act of will. This is why the world is unfair. It's not God. God doesn't sit up there and say, okay, I'm going to give you a house, a car, a big bank account, and all this because you pray for it. And then the child is over there starving to death. He can't get a handful of rice. That's not God's doing. This is the act of the unified will of groups of people and thoughts heterodyning upon each other. Doesn't this make perfect sense? And anybody with eyes to see and ears to hear and a brain to think sees that this is the truth. And so if you want to change the world, bring together groups of powerful, like-minded people and create these vortexes of thoughts and send them out there and make it so. Now, our good Maharishi Mahesh Yogi tried to do this with transcendental meditation, and it was a good effort, but it wasn't unified enough, and I'm afraid it was too passive. You know, if you send out thoughts of love and peace and kindness, you're not going to get enough response. The world is going to, that's not active enough. That's, you know, you send out kind of a tranquilizer, and it's going to make people tranquil, but if you sedate people, they're not going to make change. So think about this. Crystal Silence League, we're very big. We're growing every day. We have a lot of power. We really should use these techniques we have to make some changes. We should pick targets. The world is in a terrible condition. Krishnamurti pointed this out. The world is very sick. The world is in terrible shape, and we spend all of our time on Facebook yak-yakking about the food we eat and how cute our dog is, and then physical challenges. How many sit-ups can you do, and how much cinnamon can you eat? When the world is in terrible shape, we have shown in the Crystal Silence League that we can make changes. People have posted prayers and they're seeing miracles occur. So we should perhaps think about these techniques, that the world is in vibratory state. Quantum physics has shown that observers can affect reality. we shouldn't waste our time theorizing about this. So let's ask the question, can thoughts influence reality? Let's examine this question. Let's go way back. Let's go back to the beginning. In fact, let's catch our breath just a minute. And why don't we have some station identification? Because that's quite a bit that I've laid on you there. Let's have station identification. Think about that for a minute, and we're going to take a step back and look into this a little bit more.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays bring two wonderful shows to suit your taste. After the spiritual boost provided by the Reverend John St. Germain during the Crystal Silence League Hour, stay tuned for In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances, contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturdays, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from noon to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back, continuing our discussion of the receptive branch, also called induction of receiving. I laid quite a bit on you that first time. Let's step back a little bit and approach this from another angle. Pastors and members of the Crystal Silence League, we create positive projections via our crystals 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night. And anyone can receive these tonics, as Mr. Conlon called them, simply by entering a receptive state and allowing the waves to flood in. This is usually done via the agency of a crystal ball. Now, these tonics are very invigorating, but even more invigorating than that, much as I love the league, is this infinite storehouse of power waiting for you to claim it. And here's where the power of the crystal reception reaches its fullest potential. Now, I'd like you to imagine, just imagine, an infinite ocean of pure power, pure energy, just waiting for you to dip into it and claim it. This energy can be used to, it can sustain you when you're tired. It can infuse an uncanny stamina to your work. It can bring prosperous attraction to every decision you make. It can endow you with love, success, pretty much anything you want. Now, this power flows from the universe itself. It is the collective mind of all conscious beings, past and present, and it's inexhaustible. It's what we discussed before. It's the aggregate collection of thought that you can link your thoughts onto. And by mastering induction, you can drink all you want from that depthless source. Now, some reception happens automatically. What must be projected must be received, right? If you project something, you've got to receive it. And when you've launched a projection, your mind anticipates receiving that for which you've asked. You've projected a thought with the anticipation of receiving it. And it's that anticipation that opens your mind for receiving. When you're sending a projection, part of your mind is also in a passive receiving mode. If you're sending thoughts of love, for example, those very same thoughts become objects of attraction. They become the magnet that draws it in. You'll automatically begin attracting love toward you. This is a magnet will attract paperclips. But, you know, what if you didn't send a projection toward a person or other physical object? That doesn't matter. You can still receive this abundance of prosperity, courage, love, forgiveness, healing, these abstracts from the divine mind itself. This is not the same as the universe. It's not an abstract. The divine mind is a term for that universal consciousness, that wellspring that is the sum total of all the thoughts that are projected by unified mind, directed thought, everyone who's sending it out there. This is what is done in the Crystal Silence League, for instance, when we were sending positive affirmation. This is a boundless source of power. This is directed thought that was mentioned by Atkinson. Therefore, reception like projection takes practice. It's got to be consciously applied. It's not wishful thinking. Although, I'll tell you, wishful thinking has a little bit of attractive power. Wishes sometimes do come true. If you wish ardently for something, you are attracting it on some level, but it can't be a passive type of wishing. But, you know, don't knock wishful thinking. Sometimes it does work, but receiving is a passive state, but it's not a condition of surrender. Receiving, just like projection, it requires a state of alert awareness. And the best description I can give you, you enter a mental state of joyful anticipation, like you're about to receive the most wonderful gift in the world, or you're about to meet the most important person in your life, something which you've waited for all your life. You have to be, oh my gosh, I'm about to get this. So the preparation for attraction is very much the same for projection. You have to clear your mind of all obstructive thoughts. You enter the silence, and you find the spiritual realm of your desire, be it love, prosperity, satisfying work, redemption, confidence, courage. There's really no limit to what you can ask of the divine mind. And your desire should be stated as a code, which is an abbreviated statement. So for love, you would first enter the spiritual realm of receiving love. And by this, I simply mean you find a place within you that experiences that joyful, expectant anticipation you feel when you're about to be reunited with someone you love. Can you dig that? The sense of anticipation, the desire for union with your lover, even though you don't have one, this is the lover that you're anticipating, right? Creates the powerful magnetism which will fuel the attractive work. You send the thought out there. It links with all the other thoughts, creating this magnificent vortex of magnetic power that goes, sucks them in. So your code might be, I'm ready for you, my love, my perfect companion, come to me. And if you want a better class of friends, you know, you're tired of all these losers and users that are sucking you dry, your code might be, I'm ready to be loved and admired for who I am. Bring me friends who will appreciate my wonderful quality. Come to me, my friends, and be alert. This is important. Watch with every nerve you have. This is not a passive thing. Well, it is passive, but it's not a surrender. You got to pay attention. You have to pay attention. And then you draw it in. You claim it. You embrace it. You welcome it. And once you've drank your fill of this, you close it down. You have to bring it into you, then close it down. And you visualize this. You can do it any way you want. I visualize my chakra points closing. I go bam, 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 bam. And you may prefer a different way to stop the flow. A hand closing, a door shutting, a tube slowly shrinking, a ball forming around you. And you may embrace it. You may physically just embrace your arms around yourself. But you have to visually and mentally close that down. You can't walk around all the time bringing this in. Although I'll tell you that there is a technique that some of the guys said they practice. They'd keep one half of their mind projecting and one half of their mind passively receiving all the time. But that's not what we're talking about now. That's a different technique, and we'll go into that later. And you know you've got it. You know you've done it right if you experience a flood of happiness so profound that you cry, you weep, tears are in your eyes. Because this surge of power flowing back to you cannot be mistaken for anything else but a gift wave from the divine mind. It's an answer, yes. It's yes. And I love that term, gift wave. That comes from the epitome of the great seal from the Tibetan yoga. And when you seriously start studying the art of attraction, you begin to think, maybe this is wish fulfillment. I'm wishing for things, and they seem to come, but it really isn't. It's not wish fulfillment. It's laying claim to those things that already belong to you. They're just out there. They belong to you, and you're laying claim to it. Okay, that's mine. I got it. That's mine. I got it. And I really think the biggest reason for failure in this life, and why most people lose confidence in their ability to attract, is because they're trying to grab onto the wrong things, things that aren't rightfully theirs. And if the biggest thing in life, if you want to set yourself up for failure, is to go after stuff you're not suited for. You know, I would have loved to have been an opera singer, but man, you ought to hear me sing. It's like two cats fighting. I would have loved to have done it, but it's not for me. And people tell me, oh, you give up too easily. You should have tried it. No, really, I shouldn't have. I really shouldn't have. Not everybody can be everything. There are some things I'm better at than anybody on this earth, I'll tell you that. There are some things that nobody can beat me at, but not opera singing. No, my cat can sing better opera than me, so forget about it. So we go back and we look. These early writers of New Thought, they wrote a great deal about that theoretical underpinning. And William Walker Atkinson, I just looked back, Practical Mental Influence, was written in 1908. So that was a remarkable book. He wrote that thoughts like electricity, light, and magnetism are comprised of waves, and they're propagated according to the strength of the sender. Let's recap that. Thought waves are therefore a measured and measurable scientific phenomenon that interacted with the natural world. Atkinson, as we pointed out, avoided metaphysical jargon, and he cautioned his readers against the fallacy that such phenomena as mind reading and thought projection were anything other than perfectly natural. This is a point that I still maintain, that mind reading and thought projection are perfectly natural, and this is the sort of thing that materialists will argue to their grave, even though there are numerous laboratory replicable scientific experiments that have demonstrated the existence of psi power. They'll tell you there's no scientific evidence. There is. All you got to do is look for it. It's there. It's replicable that psi exists. Thought waves emanating from one individual are attracted to similar thought waves of others, joining with them and creating an attractive force that draws in even more similarly charged thought waves. Thus, the attractive force of similar thought waves of numerous individuals combine in heterodyne, generating enormous waves of power. And Atkinson and Collin proposed all of reality on the most fundamental level consisted of waves. And that reality on the most fundamental level could therefore be influenced and shaped by a sufficiently powerful projection of thought power. Wow. Now, I want to leave you with a few things. Einstein's relativity demonstrated that reality is comprised of space-time events and how they relate to each other. Therefore, objects are not static events, but activities. There can't be an apple, you know, for example, without all the activities associated with the apple, which brings it into existence. An apple is an activity. Something that is being an apple, as opposed to the table upon which it sits, which is busy being a table. So everything in the universe is a process, constantly in a state of flux and motion. And that motion, that activity, is meaningless except in how it relates to another activity. You cannot have an apple without other things to compare it to. So quantum mechanics goes further and claims that these activities, on a very tiny scale, occur as waves of indeterminate nature, which only become determined upon observation. In other words, thought. So thought brings reality into existence. We've discussed this. And so therefore, the New Thought authors anticipated the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum theory, which was proposed in the late 20s by Niels Bohr and Werner Heisenberg. Indirectly, but there it was. The act of observation determined the final state of the object. So, if observation is the same as thinking, observation has a direct effect on reality. That's one version of the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum theory, which was anticipated in 1908 by Atkinson, which I think is very interesting. And we talked about how there were different types of thought waves, but thought waves don't dissipate immediately. They still hang around. And if the light from a star, you know, thousands and thousands of light years away, sometimes millions of light years away, can still reach the Earth after millennia. If a thought wave is powerful enough to do that, why can't a thought wave propagate just as much? This is a very powerful thing to think about. The thought can linger long after the host who thought it is dead. Now, we know this can be true in concepts. You know, we know that there are thoughts that from religious leaders, you know, Christ, Buddha, philosophers such as Socrates, Plato, Lao Tzu. We know their thoughts have shaped reality forever. We know you can go to certain places in the world and feel amazing sources of energy. We know Stonehenge is a magical place. We know you can go to certain places in the world and feel the splendid energy and power. You know, you can go to certain places on Earth where tragedy has occurred and feel the sorrow and the grief. I want to leave this because I want to talk more about it next week on the show. We go through life sometimes thinking that we're at the mercy of large forces that were like a cork upon the waves of the ocean. But we're really not, because we are the ocean. We are the ocean. We create the waves. Rather than being the cork, we are the ocean. And I'd like you to think about that. This is a tremendous source of power. I'd also like to leave you with something that Charles Fort once said. If there is such a thing as a universal mind, does it necessarily follow that it's sane? I'm John St. Germain. I'll see you next week.